for a tune.
Welcome everybody to episode number 163, I think, of the Average Man podcast, Running from the Dark. Welcome. It's Sunday afternoon, as usual. This has sort of become a bit of a habit for me lately, where I'm sort of hitting one week, missing the other week, and that was not the plan running into Christmas, but I've been doing them fortnightly lately. Yeah, I guess it kind of is what it is. What did I miss out last week's? I was busy all day Saturday working on the car, and then it was grand final. It was the rugby league grand final on the Sunday, so I kind of, my day was more geared around that than anything else. Rugby league grand final was last Sunday. It was obviously the AFL grand final on the Saturday as well, which I don't watch because I don't care. But yeah, it was a pretty good rugby league grand final, mate. The Broncos came from behind, looked like they were in for all money with 20 minutes to go. They were just had all the momentum. They've been putting points on. They looked like the better team, and then all of a bloody sudden, I can't remember if they scored first and then did the 40-20, but at some point, a large key factor in it turning was Nathan Cleary kicking the 40-20, and then they steamrolled and put like 3 points on with 20 minutes to go and ended up winning the damn grand final. It was a real masterclass from the top team in the competition, 3 years in a row, grand final winners, the Panthers, and it was a bloody good, exciting game. I really wanted the Broncos to get up and win, but, you know, neither of them are my team. I wasn't, like, really that sore about it. It was just that I thought it would have been a good story for the Broncos to get up. But, you know, they're a young team, mate. They do the right things. They should be back in the same position again next year to give themselves a chance to play for the big prize again. You know, they're not a team that is, you know, got a lot of players departing or have older players who sort of, this was their last chance to sort of get the flag. So they should be all right, mate. They've been rebuilding to get to this stage for the last 5 to 7 years, probably as it is. So they're right where they need to be, I reckon. Need to just keep pushing forward. It's funny because I thought about when they did the welcome to country at the start of the game, as they do. For these events lately, I heard, I think it was on Instagram, I saw a clip of Sam Newman, the AFL douchebag guy, talking about, you know, he's the outspoken, used to, you know, he loves to be in the spotlight for saying controversial things, old Sam Newman, and he was talking about the welcome to country greeting and saying how it offends him as an Australian citizen to be welcomed to his own country. And then he went on to talk about, basically what I got out of the whole thing was this: is he had the whitest outlook on the welcome to country greeting that I've ever heard. And he goes on to say, like, you know, he's offended by it. Why does he need to be welcomed to his own country? Then he starts talking about the song We Are One But We Are Many and recited some lyrics from the verse there. We are one, but we are many, and from all the lands on earth we come. We sing as one, and sing with one voice. I am, you are, we are Australian. He said, why can't we just play that song? And, you know, get rid of any of the separation of the different cultures tonight. And I just thought, look, man, that whitest outlook ever on that issue. I personally love that song. I think that's a great song, and that could, you know, that represents us, should represent us more than the bloody anthem does as it is. I think it's a great song, but the way he was using it to bolster up his argument was just like, so you think we should just forget about a culture that has been here longer than any other known culture on earth, and get a song written, a song written by white people, sung about how we're all one, and, you know, we are one, but we are many, and, you know, we're all here and in it together, and that should just steamroll over the welcome to country greeting, and that should be suffice to the Indigenous Australians to go, yeah, no, it's all good, man, because we played a song written by some white guy that said that we are one, we are many, but we're all the same, so you don't need to welcome us to country anymore, so it's all good. We're all the same. And it's like, dude, come on, man. The welcome to country thing, while I think it's awkward and quite often really poorly executed, the concept behind it, I don't have a problem with, you know. We're acknowledging the fact that this is a country that belonged before white settlers came here to First Nations, you know, Indigenous Australians. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. We haven't done that in the past. Our history books are very scarce on the details of what really went down when the European settlers came here. There's so many untold stories. This is one of the things that I'm really intrigued about in Australian history. We don't get taught these stories. We don't hear these stories in the mainstream, but I've heard snippets of them from people who've been around and lived some interesting lives and had some interesting family history about horrible things that went on stations and in outback Australia and, you know, between the European settlers and the Indigenous Australians back in the day. And then a lot of these stories, I feel, are just dying with the people that knew them, and they never got told. Like, we watch all these movies about American culture and history, you know, the Native Americans and what happened when the, you know, with the slaves when they went over to America, and what happened when, you know, with their the Civil War, when the North and the South fought each other. We hear all this history about, you know, England and right back to 2,000 years ago, and then we know all about the fall of Rome, and we know a fair bit about Greece and all this history. And then when it comes to Australia, it's just like, yeah, the Europeans came and they just rocked up and set up villages, set up towns, and the convicts were kept here for a period of time, and then people started coming over and coming to make their life anew in the new country. And it's like, well, what happened to, like, we know that there was raping and abuse and stuff that went on against the Indigenous Australians when the Europeans got here, but we don't have solid stories that are part of our history and our lore that we know. Like, name one famous story of an Indigenous Australian or a group of Indigenous Australians that were displaced from their land, murdered, had members of the group raped, and, you know, went on to escape the clutches of the white man and go off and make a life for themselves outside of what was their original traditional way of life. You know, because we see those stories on the big screen about, you know, as I just said, some of those other cultures all the time. You name one specific group of people or one specific Aboriginal person whose story you know from 200 years ago when the European settlers got here, and I'll wait. Yeah, we don't really know any. And if you do know a story, you're very well educated and you've been, you know, spent time looking into these sort of the history and those stories, and they're not commonplace. Nobody knows these things. They don't get taught in our schools. And where I'm going with that is, it's like, so what is the problem to now take a step back and go, hey, look, we can at least start to acknowledge the fact that this was, you know, publicly acknowledge the fact that, you know, this is a land that was stolen from Indigenous Australians, and make that just a part of the cultural conversation. It's not about making people feel bad. It's not about rubbing people's noses. It's just about acknowledging what the truth is and the history that is there. And to just say that you can need to get rid of the greeting, the welcome to a country, and just replace it with a song written by a white dude that makes everybody feel warm and fuzzy is so fucking tone deaf, man. It's like, dude, you're completely missing the point. What does it cost you to sit there and listen to a proud Indigenous Australian person welcoming you to country, which is that they've traditionally, their people, their culture, our culture, my culture, have had a connection with the land. And they're not saying, this is our land, get off, we're the First Nations people. They're saying, it's essentially saying, let's put all that past behind us. We are where we are. You're acknowledging that I am a traditional owner of this land, and I am welcoming you onto the land because we're all here already, and let's move on with this and live in peace as one culture. But there's nuances and subcategories inside that Australian culture. And what is wrong with recognising that, especially on the on a big stage like that? I just don't get it, man. It was such a white response, I thought. Tone deaf, really tone deaf, man. So, yeah, again, I think they need to get better. They've only been doing those for 10 or 15 years, maybe 10 years, you reckon, maybe 15 years, you know, since we've been doing Welcome to Country. So they need to get better at it, you know. It's a bit tacky sometimes. Sometimes it's awkward and whatever, but that's, you know, whatever. It's a new thing. I'm sure it will get better. But to just say we don't need it is, I just think, it's just a bit crass, just a bit, you know. It just kind of shows what to say that you're not racist and then have that as your opinion and think that people just need to deal with it and get on with it and you've got the solution. It shows that you really are a racist, essentially. You just don't, just because you don't hate people who are Indigenous doesn't mean you're not racist. If you disregard the culture of another group of people and think that your culture can supplant it, you've got the answers to supplant the nuances within their culture. That's racism, dude. Anyway. What a stooge, man. But anyway, mate, so aside from that, it has been, yeah, so I have been doing them sort of fortnightly lately, I guess, which is not great. That's where we're at. It's been school holidays. Kids go back to school, not tomorrow, but the day after. I'm sure all the parents and mothers particularly are breathing a sigh of relief in unison that the kids who we love and we love spending time with are going to go back to school and someone else is going to look after them for 6 hours a day, 6 to 7 hours a day, and give us a little bit of a break. Even if that break is going back to work, it's still a break. You know, we love them, love to be around them. It's also, we love to have a break from them too, love to miss them. So bring on school, I reckon all the parents are saying. we've done pretty well. These holidays, my wife's done a good job with the kids, keeping them off the iPad as much as possible, keeping them engaged, doing artwork and having play dates and drawing and going down the pools, down the public pools, which is sort of a mainstay in Headland summer activities if you don't have your own. And it's quite funny how I was at the pools last weekend with just me and the daughter. My boy didn't want to come down and he might have been having a play date of his own. So we're at the pool, me and her, and she bought the little turtle toy she has that like swims when you put it underwater. And she had it sitting on the side of the, we were playing with it, and then this kid was there with his dad sort of watching us, and then we sat it off to the edge of the pool with her goggles and just sort of splashed around playing together. It was half a meter from where we were. And this kid saw it and trotted up to it. He was young, he was like three or something, three or four. Trotted up and saw it, and ooh, and his dad saw the turtle, and they knew that it was ours. We were just playing with it, and his dad goes, "Oh yeah, that's that little girl's turtle, that's her toy." And I was like, "Okay, cool." He's gonna tell this boy that's not his toy. And then the kid goes, "Oh," and that reaches and just grabs a turtle, and dad just sort of sits there and yeah, chats to him and talks to him while his kid's playing with Heidi's toy, and I'm sitting there going, put the fucking toy down. What are we doing here? Why are you teaching your kid it's all right to just go and grab other people's things? And it's like, it pissed me off, man, because the dad didn't stop his kid and teach him the right thing, which is that's not yours. If he wanted his kid to play with it, you need to wait for us to go, oh, it's okay, he can play with it. You don't just say to your kid, oh, that's not yours, that's someone else's, and then continue to let him pick it up and play with it. You go, that's not yours, mate, it's somebody else's toy, you can't just grab that and play with it. And Heidi's like looking at him out the side of her eye thinking, is this kid going to steal my toy? Because it happens all the time down there. You take the dive toys and shit and other kids come from every angle and swarm on them, and you got to have eyes in the back of your head to try and keep your toys as yours, otherwise kids will play with them and then just run off with them. And I'm like, now you put me in this awkward position where if I say something, I'm not going to say something to a three-year-old kid. Like, it's, you know, it's a bit over the top because he's touching my daughter's turtle. And I'm not going to say something to the dad either and look like a dick, especially because he was kind of, you know, a bit of a sort of nerdy kind of dad. I don't want to be like, you know, like I'm staunching him out. Like, hey, mate, that's my daughter's turtle. So I'm like, okay, this is an awkward position, man. Like, I don't really mind your kid playing with the turtle, to be honest. And I think if you'd have just, I said, to him, don't touch the turtle, I would have said, it's okay, as long as he just puts it back when he's finished. But the fact that you just said, oh, you knew that was someone else's, and then you let your little entitled kid pick it up and play with it anyway, pissed me off, eh? I was like, you put us in an awkward position, and you've just taught your kid that even if something isn't his, he can just go and grab it and play with it anyway. It doesn't matter. People's possessions don't really matter. If you want it, you grab it, you touch it, you play with it. It's like, fuck, teach your kids right, man. I didn't say anything. I just sort of looked at him out the corner of my eye and thought, you're a fucking dick. But, you know, that was the end of it. The kid put it down and walked off, and no harm, no foul. But it just pisses me off, man. Like, just the way some people's minds work, you know what I mean? You've got to teach people these things. I know it seems like a small thing, but it's a pattern. You know, that's patterned behaviour. You're teaching them concepts, or not teaching them concepts, from a young age when you let your kids do shit like that. So, anyway, I waited for him to go to the toilet, and then I bailed him up and punched him in the stomach and said, "Your kid ever touched my daughter's turtle again, mate? I'll have you." No, I didn't really, obviously. I run through these scenarios in my mind, though. Sometimes I'm a bit messed, you know, I'm a bit fucked up by it. What else have we been doing, man? I just got back from Running Waters. Went there Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And, you know, it's first week of October now, pretty hot. It's been 40s and shit in Hedland recently. And I kind of planned it that we would go when it is warm and hoped that it would be not too hot at night out there, because in Hedland it's been muggy in the evenings, you know, still and muggy, and we were out there in swags, just the ute with the canopy and the swags. You know, muggy, still weather isn't great for sleeping, and it is great for mosquitoes. So I was a little, you know, hoping that we'd timed it well. Got out there and we went during the week so it wouldn't get too busy. And there was a few people camped along the water's edge when we got there. But the spot that I really wanted, which is the spot up the far right-hand side as you rock up to the creek, which is where the water bubbles up out of the water, is where you actually get the running water from. That was free, so we pulled in right next to the running water, set up our camp, which was great. It's sort of how I'd envisioned it. And the weather was spectacular, really turned it on for us. So I don't know, I haven't checked I had no reception out there. I haven't checked the weather since I've been back, and I'm not sure if it actually was cooler out that way or if it was just you're in tree cover and you can't buy the water. But it wasn't that hot during the day. If you sat when the sun was, you know, coming through the gaps in the trees, if you sat in the sun, you know, you got hot, you warmed up pretty quick. But in the shade, moving around the place, it wasn't muggy, it wasn't thick, hot air, it was perfect, but the water was beautiful, it wasn't chilly or cool in the water at all, it was just perfect temperature in the water. In the evenings, it kind of got still and warm for about an hour, hour and a half, about maybe like 6 o'clock. By 7:30, like a chill had set into the air. We had the fire going, just a little fire, and actually had to get the sleeping bags out to sort of throw over us in the swag at night. So it was just perfect. It was a cool, you know, fresh night, hot days, beautiful water temperature, just everything was mint. Got the spot we wanted right next to the, like, I woke up in the middle of the night both nights at 1 a.m. and when I was trying to get back to sleep, I could literally hear the stream running, like, that's my version of running water. I don't know how that came out over the microphone there. But you know, like, this is the kind of shit I listen to on my phone when I go to sleep at night. I put on that sleep music and it's like, you know, running water, babbling stream, you know, rain, storm with, you know, music in the background, shit like that. And it was like listening to the actual nature. Oh, it just soothed my little soul and put me back to sleep super quick. I was about 3 or 4 meters from where those little waterfalls were. It was perfect. Bloody well nailed it, which I was stoked about. You haven't been there for a couple of years, so super happy about that. Probably the worst thing that happened was I've gone and bought like a propane gas bottle with the screw-on burner on top, so that we're not chewing up the battery power. You're just cooking on the induction cooker the whole time we're away. And I got it out. I haven't used it yet. Got it out to use it for the first time, and the gas bottle was empty. So I think it's like must have vibrated open while I was driving, I suppose. And yeah, like I got there and literally there was no gas in it, so I had to cook on the induction cooktop the whole time anyway, which worked out well with turning the car on and making sure the solar blanket was getting good sun while I was cooking. You know, I think I got down to, it would get down pretty low while you were using it, and then it would pump up again during the day sitting in the sun. I think on the third day we got down to 65% battery on the canopy, and by the time I got home, four and a half hour drive, that was back up to 99%. So it was good to figure, to know that I can use the induction cooktop for 3 days in a row like that, cooking every meal on it, and still not run out of battery and be able to recharge after a decent drive. But also pissed me off that my gas bottle was frigging empty when I went to use it for the first time. You know, mate, we had some fun out there. We caught some yabbies, just catch and release, fucked around with a little beer can traps in this little catchment area before you hit the main river, the main creek there. What else happened? Yeah, and you went for a walk with Shade one morning and rolled in a big, fresh, stinky cow shit. She was on the naughty dog list for the rest of the day, man. She stunk, dude. It was so putrid. And put her in the water and washed her off and tried a few different washes. Even tried toothpaste, trying to wash the smell out of her. It took us like about 5 or 6 goes in the water to get rid of the smell during the course of the day before she was finally clean again. It was just horrible, man. She just thought she was so clever rolling in this cow shit and all up on her neck and on her back. And I was like, oh, you filthy little muppet. But it was a great time, man. You know, just no reception out there. So the phone was just on airplane mode. All we could do was play music off the phones, and no phone call, no messages, no Instagram, no nothing, none of that bullshit. You had to just chill and talk to each other, and relax time was literally just kicking back and relaxing, you know, not sitting on your phone. So it's definitely exactly what we needed, man. I needed a bit of downtime, and the cup is full after those few days out there, which was good. Now, there's something I wanted to speak about on this podcast. It is D-Day for The Voice. The referendum takes place during this next week. And, you know, there's a lot of conversation around it, a lot of conflicting opinions and ideas. And at the end of the day, I'm not that fussed which way people vote. I just want people to vote based on what they actually believe, and hopefully based on a little bit of research, like a bit of Googling. Have a couple of conversations, you know. Don't just vote blindly. Look into it, is what I'm saying. Don't vote out of ignorance, and don't be bullied into voting a certain way. Like, if you think that 80% of Indigenous Australians want this, if you're a good person, you need to vote yes, I would challenge that and say, how the fuck do we know 80% of Indigenous Australians want this when we haven't taken the fucking vote yet? That is media hype at its finest. That number's been getting thrown around everywhere. I keep hearing it in articles and hearing people spout that figure in when they're selling it. 80% of Indigenous, even my mate Briggs, Senator Briggs, 80% of Indigenous Australians want this. I'm like, where the fuck did you get those numbers from? Where did we get those numbers from? Was there a poll? Did somebody do a poll? Who the fuck takes place in polls? If you're listening to this right now and you've ever voted in a poll, a political poll, then, one, lose my number, and two, you are in the minority. Nobody fucking votes in those things. So how the fuck do we know 80% of Indigenous Australians want this? They sure haven't fucking taken a vote in Port Hedland, where I'm from, and this is my whole problem with the Voice in the first place. Who are we serving? Which 80% of which demographic of Indigenous Australians vote yes? Who did you serve? So 80% of the Indigenous Australians that have been asked specifically by a specific group of people who took these numbers voted yes. Where do these people live? Where did these people live? Who were these people? Were they from communities? Were they from rural Australia? Were they from Victoria and Sydney and Canberra? And were they from the big cities? Were they people who were in the sphere of, in the same circles as the people who took the poll, you know, like the people you had access to, you know, the higher educated Indigenous Australians? Who the fuck took the poll? Where did they take the poll? And how did they get land on this figure of 80% of Indigenous Australians want this? It's a bullshit figure. And it's being used to shame people who just want to be good people but don't really know what the deal is with the whole voice thing. Shame those people into just voting yes, because 80% of Indigenous people want it. If you're not a racist, then you will vote with the Indigenous people, right? That's basically the angle that these people from the Yes campaign are coming at this with. And that on its own is nearly enough to make me vote no, just out of principle that your campaign, the angle that you're coming at this thing, your campaign is so cheap that I just got to think there something ain't fucking right. But there's more to it than that as well, in my opinion. Look, I reposted a clip from an Indigenous fella a couple of weeks ago, a week or two ago. And it was strange that Instagram put like a fact checker's tag on the bottom of my post saying this has been fact checked and been shown to be partially incorrect or partially false information or something. And I was like, what the fuck? It was a guy's opinion. His opinion can't be false information. It's his fucking opinion on his culture. Very strange. But what he was saying was sort of, he said it more succinctly, more directly than what I've been sort of saying, and I thought that he just nailed it, so it's the reason I reposted it. And it also helps to see an Indigenous man who looks like an Indigenous man saying it, because then people don't question his motives. But like he said, this was dreamt up or thought up by white Australia, sent through the universities and then sent out through the black elites who won't do anything for the grassroots issues that everyday black fellas face. This is my whole problem with it. Who are the people on the committee of The Voice? We don't even know how many it's going to be. Very vague on those details. How are they chosen? Where are they chosen from? Who are they actually serving? If the government doesn't just want to bow down to the Indigenous Australian agenda and give them everything they want, that is not a smart political move, right? So clearly, if they have, if they're pushing this agenda, they're pushing this committee of The Voice, they're going to stand to benefit something from it, right? This is not just an altruistic, we just want to be good people and do the right thing for the Indigenous culture of this country. No, it's not that. It's we need to look like we're doing the right thing, and we need to find out a way where we can make this situation benefit us. So we'll get a committee of Indigenous Australians. We'll call it The Voice. They get a voice in Parliament, put it in the Constitution, and then we will handpick the people that go on that committee and make sure that we get the results we want from those people, right? This is how I see it going. Who are these people serving? Are they serving the government that's put them in place, or are they serving the communities in Alice Springs? Do they know anything about the plight of those communities in Alice Springs, or Fitzroy Crossing, or up in Arnhem Land, or in far north Queensland? Do they know anything about these communities and what they need, what they want, and are they there to help them, or are they there as a political tool? And once you've got this political tool in place, what I'm worried about is that people can then go, you know, those issues that you guys are concerned about, and if this is fair on Indigenous Australians, or if we need to do more for the Indigenous Australians in this particular bill or whatever it is that we're currently talking about. They say, well, the thing is, we ran it past The Voice and they're on board with it, so Indigenous Australia is on board with this. It's all good. So no matter what they're doing, no matter what fuckery they're up to, no matter who they're screwing down, no matter who they're forgetting about, no matter who they're not helping, no matter who they're not sending money to, they can say that, hey, we ran this past The Voice, who's in her back pocket, and they're happy with it. So you all can shut the fuck up, because we're doing it now anyway, and we've, you know, ticked the box. And people are not looking at it like that. They think, we're going to have a voice in the Constitution. So who? Who's going to have a voice in the Constitution? Who? Who? Some hand-picked Indigenous Australians who fucking who are, you know, the educated, wealthy members of the of society, and their benefits probably align a lot closer with the rich, wealthy, educated white Australians than they do with the you know, underfunded, undereducated, disenfranchised community members in rural Australia. That's what I'm saying, okay? Who are we getting in bed with? Because there's not enough detail around it. And to say that, to do this, such a final, such a definite decision, you know, to make, it's like you may be setting something in stone that is going to work against you and you're really going to have no recourse against, because they can close the book on that discussion and say, shut the fuck up, we got your voice in the Constitution, now we play our fucking game the way we want to fucking play. You guys were too short-sighted or short-sighted enough to think this was a good idea and that we had your interests in fucking, your best interests at heart. Well, you fucked up and now we have a fucking, a group of, you know, a shill group of Australians acting as the voice for the entire country and all the different cultural subsets throughout, you know, throughout rural Australia, and they, you know, essentially are doing our bidding. We say what we want to do, they say it's all good, and then we can say that we've ticked that box. I'm ranting on a little bit, but I just want to make sure, you know, it takes me a few circles around the issue like that to make sure I covered all my bases. I'm not super efficient, perhaps would be the right way to put it. I'm not super efficient with my words. Sometimes, you know, I use more words than I need to get the same point across. But, yeah, what do you do? I'm just a fucking dumbass chippy, mate. End of the day, what do I bloody know? Also, something else to consider with the voice is, you know, on their agenda, I believe, fairly openly stated, you know, down the road is treaty is part of the agenda, and that basically, and the inevitable reparations that would follow, that would be part of the same agenda. So, do we really need to spend more money, send more money to be poorly managed and squandered out to certain Indigenous groups again? Is that really helping the communities? If you live in rural Australia now, if you live in remote communities, if you've had anything to do with Indigenous communities, have you seen the money that they get from royalties and stuff? Have you seen that really changing lives and just and benefiting the community and, you know, really going to the right cause? Because that's not what I've seen. So do we really need more money, more reparations going out to Indigenous Australians for to be poorly managed and squandered again? And that's what will happen if there's treaty and, you know, the, as I said, the inevitable reparations that would follow from that. So don't take my fucking word for it. I'm no sort of political fucking commentator, mate. I hear what I hear. I sort the information as best as I can with the tools that I have and knowledge that I have. I go on my gut feeling. What does this fit? What do I feel? I look at the way the other side are presenting. Well, both sides are presenting their arguments, and I think that seems legitimate to me. That seems sort of like dodgy scare tactics that I've seen before, and I don't like that. And then that, you know, that's how I make my decisions on these things. Okay, I'm no expert on the fucking on the whole situation, but I have done a little bit of research. I've listened to a few people speak on it. I've listened to some talks, had some discussions in real life, and that's how I'm making my decisions. So all I'm saying to you is look into it. Don't vote out of ignorance, and don't be bullied into voting a certain way because of a media narrative. Because, at least if you do think you're supposed to vote yes, you can still vote no if you don't want to vote yes, and no one will know. You can just tell your mates at work that you voted yes and you're a good person. But really, just vote with your fucking heart, mate. That's the main thing. Do a little bit of research, vote with your heart. Weird fucking times, man. Weird times. I never would have been so skeptical about these kind of things pre-COVID. Post-COVID, I'm much more skeptical. I definitely would not call myself a conspiracy theorist, although some conspiracies are clearly true, have been proven to be true, and will continue to be proven to be true. I'm not, like, that's not my bread and butter. I think a lot of those guys are very silly and they love to jump on board for every conspiracy. Hey, I'll hear them out. I'll entertain them. They're interesting. They're entertaining. I like hearing them. I like knowing about them. They're fun. But it's, I don't base my core values on, you know, the conspiracy theorists' outlook on life. But there are certain things that are going on that you need to be able to... It's funny because of the conspiracy theorists are so silly, they kind of do a lot of damage to the cause of people who... Of issues that are real issues that are going on in the world, but kind of border on the conspiracy theory side of things. And because conspiracy theorists are so silly, it makes people shy away from looking into these things or considering them to be serious issues and not just frivolous conspiracies because of the silliness attached to the whole movement. So they do a lot of harm, right? You know, flat earth, it's like if you, and I'm going to get there in a second, but I'm talking about particularly right now, like the Great Reset, to believe that there's people out there who are trying to engineer a Great Reset. I mean, there's been a book called The Great Reset by one of these people. But anyway, to believe that is unfortunately, if you... You know, it depends how many degrees of separation are between the two, but is unfortunately eventually connected to flat earth theory, which is where I'm going. And that's very unfortunate because flat earth theory is ridiculous. Those people are clowns. And then, you know, you can draw a bridge from one conspiracy to another, to another, to another, and land on things like the Great Reset, the fact that people don't want us to eat meat anymore, the fact that people want to keep feeding us grains and soy and vegetable oils and you know, make us eat crops that they control and keep people sick and weak and uneducated about things like their own health and you know, and it's also this whole idea of the Great Reset, right, which is essentially elites, global elites, talking to each other. And I understand this can sound like a conspiracy, but there's a thing called the WEF, the World Economic Forum. It's held in Davos every single year, and billionaires and world leaders like Justin Trudeau and Klaus Schwab and Bill Gates and these fuckers all meet up together and discuss the way they think the world, the direction they think the world needs to be moving in. And then they can go and influence, I mean, some of them are world leaders, as I said, but then they can go and, if they're not world leaders themselves, they can go and influence world leaders to make policies to push culture in the direction that they want it to go. Right, that is happening. That's happening. Those discussions are happening, and there's things around them, and a lot of it's to do with our the economy, obviously, and people's health, and it's tied in with pharmaceutical drugs. It's tied in with our diet. It's tied in with our health and the information that we have around those things. And it's terrifying that these fucking people want to have so much control over our lives, and it's also like kind of being balanced by the fact that. We have what's called the Great... Oh, man, I can hear my kids screaming in the background. It's really distracting. We have what's being called like the Great Awakening going on one hand, and then you have these essentially evil billionaire world leader types and you know, they're not even world leaders. They're global influencer types, who are trying to go the complete opposite way and gain more and more control over society. Hang on, I've got to stop. I sound like the kids are killing. All right, that was really hard to keep focused when I could hear them just being peanuts in the background there. But it's like, it's funny that we would be so opposed to the idea that there's people out there who are conspiring together to gain more control over the general population, when this is really actually an odd time in history. Like,
we're used to this way of government, of freedom. We're used to this level of freedom now because we've had it for, you know, 100 plus years, maybe 100, a bit over 100 years, a sort of, it's been this way as far as how much freedom people actually have. And so we kind of think that this is the way, but it's actually rare and uncommon, and it is more of an anomaly throughout history when you think about it, right? So right now is the strange time. This is, it's weird that we have this much freedom and autonomy as a society. So to think that that there's not powers in the background who are going to benefit from having more control over people and be able to make more money and make more decision and, again, just have more power in general, to think that there's not people out there like that working together to try and come up with a multitude of different strategies to take freedoms and things off people is kind of naive. And now I don't think that the pandemic was manufactured, but I certainly think these people I'm talking about jumped on top of it and thought, wow, we can really benefit from this. We can capitalize on this. And they put things in place to do just that. There's a reason why the archetypal story of money and of control hungry people is a story that we have as an archetypal story, like people seduced by power who sell their souls for it. You know, we hear stories of rebellion and uprising, and these things are built into our psyche, and these stories have repeated themselves throughout, you know, different cultures throughout the years. Essentially, the reason for that is because it's real. And it's happened time and time again throughout history. And it's like a warning for people who are in our exact position where you're comfortable and you feel like everything's safe and, you know, that we're in a situation where we have control and, you know, we don't need to be worried about unforeseen enemies. But you do. That's why those stories exist, you know. So it's crazy to think that people would not consider the fact that that's a reality. And, you know, who knows how this will all play out in the long run. I mean, I guess history would probably teach us that eventually we're going to go through another cycle and things will be a lot worse off than they are right now. But who knows how long that cycle is, if this is we're at the end of it or if this is just a hiccup in the road and things are going to continue to move forward progressively like they have done for the last 100 years, for another 100 years. Who knows? But at least we have we have access to information and we have a fighting chance. You know, we've got half a chance to talk to each other and to share information and to be aware of things that might be happening that used to be behind the wizard's curtain. We can now see those things and decide whether or not we want to take action or not. That's enough of that rambling for one day. The main thing I wanted you to get out of this podcast was about the voice. Look into it for yourself. Make your own decisions. And don't vote out ignorance. Before I get out of here, I want to play a couple of tracks from Zach Bryan, who is a country singer that I've been feeling recently. This cat, real simple songs. It's not overproduced like a lot of country can be, just sort of the dude and a guitar quite often. And I'll go out with a couple of his tracks. I really love him, man. I love the vibe. I love his voice. I love his lyrics. He writes a ton of songs. He's only a young cat. But Zach Bryan, if you like the tracks I'm about to play, go out and give the fella a listen for yourself. This one's called Traveling Man.
Just a traveling man, you see. Wherever this road goes, where I will be. Now catch me a ride on a boat to Spain. Tell a woman that I love her and forget her name. And I wish I I can stay for midday coffee. And I just can't get this dreaming off me. If I could find me a place to rest my mind. But mama always saying you'll be there in good time. There's some headlights burning down the highway, and I think that I may just hitch me a ride. 'Cause I'm a traveling man by trade, sir. We're all running from the things inside.
Good, eh? And another one of his tracks I'll chuck on for you is, he's playing in the background there, Quitting Time. Love this track, man. I love the track. If you've had enough of work, if you had enough of your job, if you feel like throwing it all in, ever sort of fantasize about that, this is the song for you, my friend. This is the song for you.
She'll cool me after dark. I know she'll cool me after dark.